Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
If you're in downtown Alpharetta, go see my friends Travis and Andy at Turinga. They're located in City Center, and if you're going anywhere for spring break, summer break, or fall break, go see the sister restaurant Turinga at Grayton Beach across from the world-famous Red Bar.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. My guest today is the Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Brian Kemp. His name is Burt Brantley. Burt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Good to see you.
It has been a minute, man.
Yeah.
The last time I saw you, you were not the governor's deputy chief of staff.
That's right.
So congratulations or condolences.
Depends on the day.
Depends on the day. Well, I really want to get into a couple of things. Before I do that, how many levels of approval? Some people are very particular about their staff people coming on to do public-facing things. And judging by the fact that you're here, the governor's not necessarily one of them.
Well, I think, you know, the benefit I have is, I guess, I've been doing this so long that people assume that I'm not going to do anything, you know, too stupid. And so
we'll try.
We'll see. We'll see how that works out. It may be the last one I do. It's really the first one I've done. I think I mentioned this to you, but, you know, we've got folks, and of course, the governor's the main spokesperson for the office, and we also have communications people. I talk to a lot of reporters on background to give them color about what's going on, but this is the first one I've done, and so we'll see. We'll see the training wheels.
And in fairness to all those things that you've done in your past life, this is actually going to be about you.
Yeah.
And I think
it's rare.
What you are a University of Georgia. You grew up in South Georgia.
Yep.
Lowndes County?
Lowndes County, Valdosta, GA.
Which high school? Because I know there's only two.
There's two main ones.
Old people.
Yeah, Lowndes High School, the county school, because we lived actually south of Valdosta, almost to the Florida border. And so we were, I actually drove through the city of Valdosta to get to the high school because it was on the other side of the city from us on the south side. But it was an incredible place to grow up. Really
they like football.
We do. We like our football for sure. And I didn't play football. I played as a kid. But it got too serious for me. I was skinny, slow, weak, you know, all the things that you can't be when you're playing high-level high school football.
No, and that is about as high as it gets.
Yeah, sure.
And for as long as I can remember, and probably far beyond that, what drew you? You went to the University of Georgia.
Yep.
Are you I would imagine that you are looking forward to seeing if they have what it takes to repeat.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's and I was, even before I went there, big Georgia fan growing up in the state, and both my girls are at Georgia now. We just dropped the youngest off a couple weeks ago, and so going to games now is going to be a reason to see them.
Are you sad or are you free?
Well, I mean, it's sad to not see them every day, but you know, I tell people that when they turn 16, you kind of start to feel like an empty nest because they're going a lot. Both our girls played a lot of sports, and so they were very busy. But no, it's incredible. We're very happy for them. I met my wife at UGA, and so a lot of our family memories are around being in Athens, going to games, and taking the girls over there and showing them, you know, where we met and went to college.
When you have the opportunity in public service piques your interest, talk about how that took shape coming out of school.
Well,
in school.
It was before that. So my dad retired from the Georgia State Patrol. And so he had his whole career spent working for the state in the State Patrol, kind of varying levels. We moved up through the ranks. We actually moved around South Georgia a good bit until I got to about second grade as he moved up the ranks through the State Patrol. My mother worked for the Department of Labor, so she was a state employee as well, and she moved along with Dad as we came up and as she progressed as well. So I saw it really from a very early age. You know, both the joys, I'd say, in the first frustrations too about dealing with the public and being in public service. And so that was, you know, I always had that sort of in the back of my mind. I wanted to be a sports writer, sports columnist. You know, Mark Bradley was I thought, how great to go to
if
games.
If I could have that guy's job.
Right, go to games, write a column or two a week. It seems incredible from the outside. And so I went to UGA to study sports journalism and picked up a political science minor only because Jack Kemp, I got kind of enthralled with him and that whole movement. It was very youth-oriented movement that he had when he was in office and ran for president. And so I was interested in politics, and so did the political science minor along with my journalism major, and went to work for a newspaper in Northeast Georgia in Jackson County. I was a sports editor, so I was covering local high school sports. But while you do that, you also cover the city council. I've sat in zoning meetings,
school board,
absolutely sat in them all, and so that's
where the rubber meets the road,
that
brother.
Rekindled, you know, I'd say the thought about potentially working in public service was seeing those folks make decisions that, you know, were sometimes controversial, but mostly for the betterment of their community. And so that's what drove my desire to then when I was ready to leave the newspaper, think about what to do next.
How did you transition down to the Gold Dome, and who gave you that first opportunity?
So I applied for, in 1999, I applied for a speech writing job at the Department of Transportation. And this was the summer of 99. There may have been 7 or 8 people that applied for it. I mean, it was, you know, I don't think the demand was there. And so I had just that week written a story about a DOT ribbon cutting in Jackson County, a big highway project up there. And so I didn't take a writing sample down. I took the paper and I said, here's what I do in a week. I wrote the story about your ribbon cutting that you guys had this week.
Oh, that's fortunate.
Yeah. I had a sports column. I had sport, you know, pictures I had taken. I mean, that kind of, you know, your name's all over the paper when you work at a small paper like that. And so they bought it, right? I had never written a speech in my life, but I'd written a column every week about whatever was going on in the world. And I convinced them that by writing a column each week, I prepared me to write a speech for the DOT commissioner.
It was a pretty decent segue.
Yeah, no, it was. And certainly, you know, whoever else had applied, I guess I made the better argument. Now, 6 months later, the recession hit, and I moved into our media relations office, and that same job, we got 300 applications after only getting 8. You know, so a lot of this just fortunate timing, as like everybody can look back in their career. But yeah, that was it. I knew I needed to move towards Atlanta to have more going on, long lasting career. So we did that. We lived in Gwinnett at the time, and so I was just able to, instead of drive to Jefferson every day, I just drove to Atlanta and started at DOT and was there for 6 years working on a lot of the public information, sharing about construction projects and all that the DOT was doing to try to make people's lives better.
I know your passion, even beyond, I know you're very happy with sitting in the executive leadership in the governor's office, but I know you love economic development, and I know you will always love economic development, and long after you transition out of doing this 4.5 years from now. Yeah. Did you see what I did there?
I did, yeah.
you will enjoy that, like, it's like you can't take it out of you.
Yeah, and I grew up playing team sports, and in Georgia, economic development is absolutely a team sport, and that is what's fun about it. You have people think, you know, it's the state that's doing this, but you've got local communities.
Oh, I've lived
the way we met. Yeah, the way we met. You've got the utility companies that are out there, right there with you. You've got every large company,
Georgia Power.
Yeah. And the others.
And the EMCs.
Yeah, absolutely.
They all throw skin in it.
The cities, AGL as well, the gas company, Southern Company Gas. They all are in the mix. And Delta and Coke and all of our large companies are also right there with us, because they know if the state grows, their business is going to grow. And so it's compiling that whole team together and say, what can we go do that's awesome? What can we do that really makes a difference? And so it really is, to me, it's very applicable to the time I had, not at a very high level at all, but playing sports growing up, and everybody having a bigger mission. You know, everybody puts aside their own personal stuff because they know if we can land this project, if we can get this, you know, company interested in Georgia, think about the thousands of lives that are going to be changed because people are going to work there and their families are going to be able to improve their quality of life because they're going to make a higher salary. And that's the fun part of it.
Well, I want to give you a compliment because I remember you telling me that when I started asking questions. And if you asked what I was really proud of from my time in public service was that I was dumb enough to go across the state line into Alabama and had the president and provost at Auburn come to Fulton. You know, I was content to just do the deal with Alpharetta. Mm-hmm. And my school board member said, hey, if you can make this work for the whole county, would you do it? And I was like, well, who the hell would say no?
That's right.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's a million, you know, it's a million residents and however many kids. And I put, because I sat there with you and you said, this is how it works. This is how all the good deals get done. And I mean the good deals. And it was Katie Kirkpatrick at the Metro Atlanta Chamber who went to Auburn and was like, you really got them to like agree to come over here? She's like, yeah, I wouldn't miss that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Republican legislators, Democrat legislators, like things nobody fundamentally disagrees with. And that's what people don't see on TV is that so many of those things are just people who want to see something good happen, regardless of party.
That's right.
That's the thing that I would give. And it's really both sides of the aisle. You know, if you can drag something great into a congressional district that's led by Democrats, the governor's not going to hold that up. He'd be happy for
that's
you.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you get elected, even if it's a close election,
it changes.
Even if it's a close election, you now represent all the people
everybody
in that district, right? Regardless whether they voted for you or not, regardless whether they support, nobody's going to agree with anybody 100% of the time.
No.
So, you know, a lot of the stuff we work on is the 90% that most people agree on. Yeah, there's 10%, whatever the number is, of issues that we disagree about. But no, I mean, for the most part, all of our economic development efforts are everybody in the pool together, working together, and really trying to make our state a better place. And then when the elections comes, we'll fight it out, and we'll, you know, and then when it's over, we'll get back together and we'll start back the business.
When you became the COO at the Georgia Department of Economic Development, which you will downplay, that's a huge deal. It's a really, really, really good job. And candidly, like, I think I would love it until I got to a place where you put me on planes all across the entire globe a lot.
Yep.
But talk about the functions that you did and in your time in that role, what the biggest wins were, and everybody knows what they, you know, but talk about the car manufacturers and the huge differences that Georgia has seen.
Yeah. The biggest role, in that specific position is coalescing and corralling all these public and private and nonprofit entities that I mentioned earlier and getting them to support what we're doing. They're going to support it. They're in, but how do you direct that support? And so, you know, if a company comes to Georgia and they're looking at us, you know, is the Delta service to and from Atlanta important to them? Well, if it is, grab them in. Let's have them in the meeting. Let's talk about all the different places that you can go.
Your Kia and Hyundai.
Absolutely. Direct to Seoul, right? Incredible benefit when we have a direct flight to somewhere, when they know they can get on one flight, they don't get delayed, the connections aren't going to get messed up, the bags aren't going to get lost, whatever happens when you connect.
Most of the time.
Sure, most of the time. And so having Delta in the room with us and making that pitch is an incredible benefit that we have that nobody else has, right? When we have Coca-Cola that has offices in
virtually every
country in the world, no matter where we go, we got an in-country person that we can, or group that we can talk to
UPS.
About what's happening there. UPS, the same way. All of these, we're so lucky. We punch above our weight in terms of really large companies that are headquartered here. And so they're all in. And so that COO role is really about making sure that machine works and making sure they're involved and they're engaged and we're doing what we need to do to go pitch our story to potential investors that are coming here. I would tell you that the biggest wins almost always are preceded by the biggest losses. And so the Rivian project out in East Georgia, Tesla had looked at that exact same site a couple of years earlier. And I was, you know, one of the folks that was dealing a lot with Tesla, by the way, an incredible company, super, super impressed with them. But you go through that project and you end up, you know, with the Rivian project that comes along later, because of all the work that we did on that. And so anyway, it's all those big wins are, and Volvo down in South Georgia looked at the same exact property that Hyundai went to. And so going, we were the last one, we're down to two, and we end up, they chose another state. Well, we got to go through that, and then win Hyundai a few years later. And so you have to know that this is the function of business. It happens in sales.
It's everything.
Right, it's everything.
I tell absolutely everybody. Everybody says you can't win them all. You can't lose them all. And people get discouraged with the losses because they hurt. Yep. And that, you know, 10 years from now, you're like, yeah, Rivian was great. Man, you remember the things you lost.
That's right. Oh, 100%. Sure.
You ask Kirby Smart, like, he can tell you every play of every big game he ever lost.
That's right.
That's just how people are.
Well, and you come out stronger. You learn from it. You know what worked, what didn't work. And even if
that will never happen again.
Yeah. Well, if you know it wasn't even anything you did, right, or you didn't do, it was other circumstances. But those really large victories for the state. And then, of course, we've had a lot here in Metro Atlanta as well, big headquarters-type projects. We also worked on the Amazon second headquarters project.
I am so glad that didn't work out.
Well, I mean, look,
it didn't work out anywhere.
It didn't work out anywhere, right? And a lot because of politics in some places. And so that also taught us a lot. You know, Amazon was very interested in transit service. And they were really the first company that said, you know, we will rely on this. Our employees will rely on this. And so it needs to be a big part of your. And so our relationship with MARTA, for example, is 100 times better. Not that it was anything bad before, but they are part of our story much more so than it was before. One of the biggest companies in the world told us this is really important to us.
When you look, I want to ask you specifically because you have sat in the administration. And I guess as a in the Department of Economic Development, you sit in the administration, but in a different way.
Yeah, right.
I want to ask you about Rivian because, as somebody who has sat in elected office, I think that there are probably things that the governor would go back and say, I could have done it this way or made the announcement this way, but you can Monday morning quarterback any number of issues forever. And he'd never admit to doing everything the right way because nobody does.
Right.
Do you feel like there were mistakes that were made, or did somebody beat you? Beat that? I felt when it came out, it was rushed. And I don't know if it was because somebody started squawking. I mean, it's an awfully hard secret to keep.
Sure.
But do you think that there is anything as you look back? And I would argue, I will say this, it is an incredible deal for the state. And as long as they are financially solvent, regardless of politics, EVs are here to stay. And you would rather be the state or the city or the county that makes them because they're going to go somewhere. And I never thought that the clean energy and the, you know, liberal hating, they would go on, man, those people are working at a factory. The odds that this has any change in their political ideology or the ideology of the community is virtually zero. Do you feel like it was, how involved, how long was that process? Was there anything you guys felt like you should have done differently?
So, I mean, no.
And I would say no.
Yeah, no. But I don't want to seem that I don't appreciate the concerns, particularly locally, you know, that was raised. So two different issues. One is the local issues that the local residents raised, which are valid and should be answered.
They're not valid. You can't say that. I will.
What's the impact to your water is a valid question. What's the impact to traffic is a valid question. Like the questions about how is this going to impact our community, I think are very valid. And we should answer those continually
with efficacy.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. And then the question about, you know, are we going down this sort of, you know, liberal clean energy path? I mean, I answer it the same way I answer people that ask about us recruiting gun companies to Georgia. You know, these people are going to employ Georgians. That's a legal industry. And, you know, are we going to turn down chances for thousands and thousands of people to be employed at higher salaries, improving their quality
good
of
jobs.
Life?
American good jobs. Companies.
And not just in Atlanta. That's the other draw of these particular projects, too, being outside the sort of 10-county metro area where, you know, I grew up outside of the 10 counties and left. And a lot of my friends did it. Well,
but you need people to live there.
We should have our class reunions in Atlanta instead of in Valdosta, because more people live here, you know, than they do down there from my class, certainly. And our reunion is coming up, which is why it's on my mind. But no, I mean, good jobs, building a great product that is going to be sold, and regardless of, you know, all the other stuff, I think we owe it to our citizens to provide the environment that draws really good jobs in, that you can stay close to. If you want to, you can stay close to home. You can work there. You can have a great career. You move up through management. And they're doing that at gun companies over here on this side, and they're doing it at Qcells up in Dalton. Yeah. Making solar cells, and they're doing it. We'll be doing it at these EV plants as well. And so, you know, you can get caught up in
they're here to stay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's any question about
that.
And
Tesla is if they had a scintilla of the success of Tesla, you'd be thrilled
for sure. Yeah, yeah. And look, if they don't succeed, we've got clawbacks in all the incentive deals. You know that that we're protected on, and if they don't, then what is the thing going to be? Is it going to be more combustible engines? Well, they can build those there too, right? Or whatever the next vehicle is going to be. I mean, we went from, you know, horse and buggy to combustion engines, and then whatever the next thing. We're all going to need to move around, and so I think it's a, in my opinion, it's a low risk environment, because these are established companies. They're making vehicles, and I think they're going to be here to stay. And so, why would we not want those thousands of jobs here, making a really great? And by the way, the truck is awesome. That Rivian truck. Anybody who can find one,
I've seen one out in the wild.
Yeah,
only
yeah,
one.
That's right. They're incredible. And because you don't have all the combustible engine parts to it, there's incredible additional kind of little tricks they can put in terms of, you know, a lot of them have like a grill built into the back, so that you can grill out if you're tailgating, and all these little extras they can put in.
I can't wait for you to be tailgating in Athens with your daughters,
incredible,
and your Rivian,
incredible,
truck.
And plugged in your music and your, you know, the fan that's keeping you cool, and it's a great product. Certainly something we were excited about when we saw it for the first time, I'm very excited about it. We absolutely owe the local folks every answer to every question that they are asking. And we're in the process of doing that. We set up committees to answer environmental questions and business and workforce and all these different things. And so we're in the process of doing that. But no, I mean, your overall question was, would we do anything different? We did. We followed the process that we followed, you know, tried and true.
15 years ago, or 15, you know, 15 years from now, they will be thrilled.
And go down to Kia. It's very similar things were asked in and around the Kia plant.
Absolutely.
I was at Economic Development when we did that project as well.
I candidly thought that was what you would say was the biggest one you ever saw.
So that's a big one, because you can see the impact.
It's right on the interstate.
Yeah, it's right there. And really turned around a town that had dried up because of textile manufacturing went overseas. But I think, you know, these two projects, and maybe more to come, will end up probably even being bigger, certainly in terms of job numbers and impact on the economy, will really even be bigger than Kia's.
Well, I want to end here. Governor Kemp has 4.5 years of eligibility left. We'll just consider him a college football player.
Yeah, all right.
What do you see? Clearly, as a deputy chief of staff, you are retained in an administration. What do you see for you down the road?
You know, I have never thought about it ahead of time. People talk about having a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan.
Well, I asked you for 4.5.
Yeah. I've never thought about it before, and things seem to have lined up and worked out. I consider myself pretty
lucky. Because you know everybody.
Well, and and I'm glad to do it, right? I mean, people have been very nice, and I try to return texts and phone calls, and when people reach out, try to do that so that we want to match. We talked with Jared, the governor's chief of staff, when he was in Secretary of State's office. A lot of people have the governor's cell phone number, and he is very accessible to people, so we want to match that as an office. And so I don't have a plan. Really, it's you know, what are we doing tomorrow? You know, what are we doing next week? How do we get through? And make sure I clarify, I'm in the official office, right? So nothing to do with the campaign guys are out working and they're doing their thing. Our job is to prepare for next year, the next budget, the next legislative session. We're already doing those things now.
I want to ask you, because they are very different. There's a meme that you saw in the last couple of weeks ago with the campaign staff.
It's been shared a few times.
And the official staff. And one of them is Tiger Woods is, you know, lean and mean at St. Andrews, and one of them's John Daly smoking a cigarette. You are here in a tie, or not a tie, here in a jacket.
Yeah.
How is it when an elected official goes in a statewide office during, you know, it's already started, but let's just say it really gets going Labor Day. Mm-hmm. I mean, how does a guy have more hours in the day than everybody else?
He does. Now, I think for us,
it's crazy.
Yeah, for us, it's really easy because there are blocks on his calendar that are campaign related, and so we have nothing to do with those. That's a whole separate organization.
Call me.
Yeah, right. and then we have blocks on the time that he's in the office and he's doing official events. So for us, it's really easy. The line of demarcation is very bright.
I'm sure.
But for him, you're talking about essentially a breakfast, a lunch, a dinner, virtually every day, traveling back and forth between those events, trying to keep his handle on what's going on in the state with state agencies and governing the state, while also spending time with voters, hearing their concerns, talking about the things that they're worried about. And it takes a special person. And I'm not someone that ever aspired to be an elected office.
Or run campaigns.
Or run campaigns either. Never done either one and don't plan to. And so it's people have their strengths, and his strength is being able to focus on what he's doing at the time, give someone their 100% of his attention, whether it's a meeting about, we had meetings this morning in the office about issues, or whether it's, you know, I'm sure there's a fundraiser or something either later today or tonight. And when he's there, he'll be 100%
all there.
And I think really all sort of politicians have to do that, whether you're a city councilman, a mayor, state senator, they all have to have that mindset. And some do it, I think, I'm sure, better than others. Ultimately, though, you know that the voters are your boss, essentially. And what are you doing to make sure you're listening to them, hearing from them, expressing kind of what your thoughts are, addressing their concerns? And that part remains constant, whether it's you're doing something in the official office or whether you're doing something out on the campaign.
I think you're a county manager next.
I have a master's in public administration.
So I'm telling you, man.
In local government,
it.
I'm not pitching for a job here, but my local government.
I just think all the things you've done would lend itself really well to something like that.
I get a really hard time in the office for being the swamp. I'm the bureaucrat. You know, anything that comes up.
Dirty government worker.
Yeah, anything that comes up, you know, 20 plus years in this now. And so I'm the voice of the bureaucrat in the office. And that's fine. Look, both my parents were.
You wear it proudly.
Absolutely. That's a patch I wear proudly.
Private sector scare you a little bit?
It does. And I did a quick 2-year stint out in the private sector right in the middle after I was in Governor Perdue's office as his communications director. I did a quick 2 years. It was great. I enjoyed it. But I got back, you know, into the safe haven pretty quickly. And
help.
I love it. It's really, really an honor, frankly, to be able to drive in every day and know that you're hopefully doing something.
Absolutely.
To help folks out and get through all the challenges that are out there in the world. And we just do our best.
Burt Brantley, you are a gentleman and a scholar. This has been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks to my friends at Solomon Brothers. You can find them at 17th Floor Tower Place in Buckhead or at Liberty Park Village off Old Milton Parkway in Alpharetta.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.